Sound of Hockey episode 269. We're calling this one the Benny Drawbars episode. Why are we calling it that, Darren? Well, we're calling it that because at the last home game for the Seattle Kraken, between the Seattle Kraken and the Ottawa Senators, I was not paying a ton of attention to what was going on, and I was just kind of standing watching the game, and I heard a song that I recognized being played on the organ by organist Benny Drawbars, and I started singing along. I was like, I recognize that. It's going doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot. And then I was like, what is that? And I was like, oh my God, that's our podcast intro song. So that was incredible. He played that for us. And then I'm just really glad that I like put it together in time to realize what it was. Because I would have felt so bad if he was like, because we talked every now and then at the games. Yeah. And if he had come up to me and be like, hey, did you hear your podcast intro? I would have been like, no, like that would have just crushed me if I if I didn't catch it. Yeah. So
it was awesome. It was incredible.
What a wonderful moment. Really, really appreciate that, Benny. Thank you so much for that. This is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL 2 Seattle on the X.
And also Curtis Izaki, who's looking dapper tonight in a blazer. Hello, Curtis.
Hey, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on the Twitter.
Are you coming straight from some work function or something?
Yeah, the day job.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, it's nice to see you both. Nice to be back with you. We miss Allison, who really brightened the studio up last time when she was here. But she did a great job. It was a wonderful episode.
It was. I actually re-listened to it, and it made me laugh audibly multiple times.
It was a fun one. Yeah, we had some good chuckles. Yeah. I will say we didn't have any new 5-star reviews come in after that episode, which if ever there were going to be an episode to bring some 5-star reviews between Allison being here in studio for the entire episode. But then also we had those quick hit interviews, which I, you know, thought were kind of fun too, not to toot my own horn because I was the one that recorded them with the players. But, you know, if ever you're going to bring them, that felt like a good time to bring a 5-star review. So, hey, maybe make up for it by bringing your 5-star reviews after this episode, because surely this is going to be a fun one as well. We do not have an interview on this one. But that's okay. We do have a lot to talk about, though, because the Seattle Kraken are on a heater. They may never lose again. Do you guys think?
It's possible.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Yep. Possible.
It's totally possible. Yep. Yeah. Things are going very well. Vibes are quite high. And we are recording Tuesday after their latest win over the Buffalo Sabres to start their 6-game odyssey through the East Coast, and oddly finishing that trip in Edmonton. Because why wouldn't they make a stop in Edmonton after playing five games?
It's like a little pop in at the end of the trip.
Yeah. Just, you know, cross over the Canadian border for no reason. Cross. What time zone are they in? The Rocky Mountain time zone, I think. Mountain time zone.
Mountain.
Make a random stop in a different time zone. I think it makes plenty of sense. Anyway, things are going well. The Kraken have won 7 in a row. They have points in 11 straight. They're 9-0-2 in that stretch. Joey Decord is literally the best goalie in the world right now. Just playing absolutely outstanding hockey, stopping everything. He looks so confident with the way he's handling the puck. He had the high flip play in the Ottawa game where he literally got the puck on his backhand and launched
it
the length of the ice on a penalty kill. I was like, what? I've never seen a goalie do that before. I mean, that was unbelievable. He's just playing awesome hockey right now. And it's been so fun to watch. And the Kraken are falling in line. You know, I've said it before, it's a chicken or the egg thing. Is it that the team starts to play with more confidence and then the goalie gets more confidence? Or is it that they start to get more confidence because they see their goalie making saves and now they know that they can make some mistakes every now and then and their goalie is going to bail them out? I think it's more the latter is what's happening here. I think it started with Joey playing outstanding hockey, and now the team in front of him is starting to really pick it up too. And by starting to, I mean they have picked it up. They look much, much better.
A lot of confidence going on in that team right now. So up and down the lineup.
And the latest game is, like we said, it's a 5-2 win over the Buffalo Sabres. They get goals from 5 unique players. They get 11 different players on the score sheet. And they get Jaden Schwartz back on Tuesday night. So lots to talk about there. Yeah, what are your general thoughts here on what's been happening with this team lately, Curtis?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to start with Joey Decord, right? I mean, this last game, 5-2 win, but in the first period, Buffalo was all over the Kraken. And Joey made a number of difficult, high danger saves. You know, you look at the just aggregate stats from the game and, you know, they still kind of skew in Buffalo's direction for that reason. He had a big first period, kept them in it long enough for the offense to come in and bail him out. So when we went into this stretch, you know, we were coming right out of that. I believe it was 7-game losing streak. Is that right?
Eight games.
Ooh,
so they
went
from an 8-game losing streak into an 11-game point streak.
Right.
Yeah. And overnight.
I remember we were talking
as in like a month.
Well, yeah, but like they went from one to the other with
no gap in the middle. Yeah. And I remember when we were near the end of that losing streak, we were talking about what the issues with the team were. And we were talking about how the goaltending was fine, but it hadn't really won the Kraken any games. You know, there hadn't been any instances where there'd been a steal. And during this stretch, there have been steals. The Kraken have been playing well, but I don't think they've deserved to win every game in this recent 7-game winning streak, for example. Joey DeCord has come up really big. So I think he's got to be the number one takeaway.
Okay, fair enough. I don't think there's any arguing with that, even though we've been accused recently, John, of not being pro-DeCord enough in some of our comment sections on soundofhockey.com. But
I obviously love Joey.
Obviously, we're very, very pro-Joey.
And
mm-hmm.
the team has been playing a lot better in front of him defensively.
Yeah.
And limiting high danger shots. There's been a couple games, and I think even the last four of his games have been his best games. The Winter Classic being one, I think even the Ottawa game was a pretty good one, where he was probably challenged a little bit more than some of the earlier ones in the streak. So I think he's really settling in, if that makes sense, right? Yeah. Where he's settling in, and he's confident, and although I'm sure he was always a confident goalie, but he looks so much more stable now than earlier this season. And maybe it's just playing more regularly too, right? You got to think that's coming in like once every four games. Could be a little bit of a challenge to maintain a rhythm. And now he's looking really good and comfortable.
And when you think about how he likes to play, which is very aggressive, handling the puck a lot, maybe it is more difficult for him to like have one start every 2 weeks rather than getting in a rhythm, playing every other day where he's handling the puck all the time.
I mean, we've seen this exact thing play out with him before in Coachella Valley last season, right? Where beginning of the season, I guess I don't know because like I didn't watch those games so closely, but I didn't feel like he was on this incredible tear for the first half of that season, you know? And then at some point it was like, well, we're not taking Joey DeCord out of the net. And he just took full control of that goal crease. Chris Drieger gets healthy. He comes back. He doesn't get to play very much because DeCord is playing so well, and he carries them all the way to the Calder Cup Finals. So we've seen it from him. I think for me, it's probably a matter of like getting comfortable and getting the belief that you can play at the top level in the world. And same thing with the AHL, right? I think there probably was a moment where he was like, you know, I need to prove that I can be the absolute best goalie at this level, and I need to get comfortable with it and all that. And he did that. Obviously he's been around the AHL for a while, but I think that's kind of what we're seeing right now is he's got that belief that he can play at this level. There's nothing like, you know, that word unflappable, like there doesn't seem to be anything that rattles him right now. You know, there's nothing. He gets scored on, he goes right back and makes yet another breakaway save on the next opportunity that comes in. And he's not getting scored on much. So it's pretty impressive to watch.
And I think we all would have forgiven him if after the Winter Classic, he had a letdown against Ottawa, right? I mean, 40,000 people chanting his name, Joey, Joey, Joey. He did all these interviews afterwards. I mean, one of the biggest days of his life, I'm sure.
Well, he had a 2-minute spot on Sound of Hockey podcast last week.
I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that.
I don't know why you're laughing at that. You're exactly
because
right.
I had forgotten.
And there's some like hyperbole that could be thrown around about him right now because he's reaching this like star level all of a sudden. You know, like people love him in this city. I think they're starting to love him across the hockey world too, after the performance he put on at the Winter Classic and the way that he interviewed after on the panel. They took him up to the desk and he wore full gear at the desk and like was so awesome in that interview. And then he went and did it again at NHL Network. Like, it's just, he's been everywhere and he's doing so much more. And all of a sudden he's on this huge pedestal, this huge stage, and he's continuing to just look as confident as he possibly can look.
It's crazy to think that first time we interviewed him was when he was in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Right. And and I think we knew then, right? Oh my God, this guy's awesome. Can't wait. You know, like we're rooting for him in any capacity, right? Whether it be with Seattle or somewhere else, like he's just a very likable person. And now the rest of the hockey world starting to see it. And I think that's really cool, right? It's something we've known for literally three seasons. And then just to see the rest of the hockey world catch on, it's pretty cool.
And the listeners of the podcast, right? I mean, he's the only player that I think you brought back twice when they were in Charlotte, right? I mean, it's just had to get him back on the podcast because he's so compelling to speak to. Such a, you know, he's easy to love just because it's easy to see in him what you would wish, you know, for yourself if you were in that place, just like really enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
You know, really embracing, you know, all that comes with it. He's so good at that. So it's, you know, you combine that with when last I checked, he was top five in the league in save percentage. Yeah. I mean, and people love goalies. So,
yeah, I mean, I wrote it in three takeaways tonight after this Buffalo game that he's got, I think it's 11 games in a row with one of the last 11 in which he didn't have at least a 920 save percentage. And every night it's like, you know, and that was the overtime game they lost to Dallas. So every game it's like 940, 950, you know, just outrageous.
It's awesome, 948. Awesome, I looked it up right before we recorded. Since December 1st, he's got a 948 save percentage, right?
That's
two shutouts.
That's awesome.
And a record of 8-2-3.
Yeah.
So
okay, that's probably enough Joey Decord talk for now. We might circle back to that. But so this Buffalo game, what I really liked about this one is Jaden Schwartz returns, and I think we're starting to see the depth of this team when it starts to get healthy, knock on wood, because there definitely was a moment tonight where Vince Dunn blocked a shot and went down the tunnel. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Their good health lasted for 12 minutes. Right. And we saw that in, I think it was year one, where it was like, they finally got healthy and it lasted for one period and then somebody else got hurt, you know, but remember in the off season, how much, and you guys gave me a hard time when I was talking about this in my sit and talk after the game tonight, but how much I was kind of harping on, I really wanted them to get one more skill player in the offseason. They finally have done that now with Tomáš Tatar, and that's exactly what I was talking about, was that trickle down. And now all of a sudden you have four lines that can score, right? It's not three lines and a fourth line that may or may not be effective. It's four lines that are scary. How do you match up against that? If you're an opposing team, you absolutely cannot match up against four lines that can score on you. You have Jared McCann, who's a 40 goal scorer from last season, the top goal scorer on the team this season, although he's been cold of late. And you have Andrei Burakovsky on the quote unquote fourth line.
Yeah, but you know, you even alluded to it in three takeaways that there's not really the fourth line concept, right?
Right.
Like, because, and if you looked at the minutes in the Buffalo game, like they're pretty much really even distributed, except for the lowest minute line was actually the Gord line, which was one of the better lines tonight.
Yeah.
So I think it's back to last year, right? Where it's so balanced. No line is really the top line. No line is like the bottom line. It's just kind of varies game to game, as long as they're all buzzing, right?
I would argue on paper, their current setup right now is better than what they had last year with their four forward lines.
I could entertain that as well.
They got to stay healthy, right? I mean, that's going to be the
main
game.
Yeah, and one thing we didn't really talk about is Yamamoto was a healthy scratch tonight.
Right.
And he actually has like four goals in the last like 3 weeks too, like one of the highest goal producers. So it's, I feel bad for him, but like,
somebody's got to come out.
Yeah.
And that's what depth is. So,
and it kind of makes sense that who would you take out instead of him? Like, I don't know.
But this is another thing we were talking about during the losing stretch, that there wasn't that kind of like upward roster pressure from the bottom that was there last year, right? It's like a good player was going to be scratched last year. And that wasn't really the case for a while, just due to injuries and how they constructed the roster. Darren, to your point, they didn't add that extra Tomáš Tatar type scorer in the offseason. They constructed it in such a way, going in with more of a more conventional, still a little bit of a crack and slant on it, but a more conventional fourth line in Vegas with Tanev and Belmar. Yamamoto was there, but Tanev
and opening night, opening
night in Vegas. It had a more kind of conventional feel to it, and there wasn't really that kind of goal scoring threat that's gonna at the bottom of the roster there to take a spot from someone who isn't producing. Now you have that.
Yeah.
And you have it on defense too, because we'll get to this in a moment, but you know, there's a certain young defenseman there, ready to take a spot if someone isn't performing. So the formula is there. Last year's formula is back. We'll see if the goal scoring comes with it.
Yeah.
In the forward group, I feel like Cartier is like the next one out, right? Maybe if they bring in Yamamoto for a bit, like that's how they're going to get Yamamoto back in.
Well, so they've been trying Cartier at center of the fourth line, right? And I guess it gets a little bit more difficult. You could put McCann at center, but it gets a little bit more difficult with how you're going to manage face-offs and defensive responsibilities if you're taking Cartier out and putting Yamamoto in.
It's interesting how you enunciated the T on center.
Center.
Yeah.
Ottawa.
Not to bury anything.
Senators.
So, well, that one I say in jest.
Yeah, but like,
I'm being silly on that one.
I do think Cartier's played well, but I'm not sure he's like solidified his spot.
No, I agree with you. I agree.
I certainly agree with what you're saying. It's just like roster composition wise, can you go without both Cartier and Belmar and still have like the kind of
yeah? But I mean, like, do you really think there's that much lost if you sub in Yamamoto for in Cartier's spot?
Yeah. You mean just
Yamamoto?
The kind of, yeah.
It was one play, right? So I don't want to make a big deal about one play, but Yamamoto is the one who set up Burakovsky on his goal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh, maybe these guys have something going. And again, it's one play, but I felt like that line played pretty well in Ottawa.
Yeah.
But Burakovsky's been bouncing around a little bit. He didn't bounce around in Buffalo, but Ottawa, he was like
playing everywhere,
playing with like five or six different players.
I do fundamentally agree with you that Cartier is kind of like the obvious choice. I think tonight, while he didn't perform terrifically in the Buffalo game, he did get a couple opportunities.
Yeah, I know.
And
he had a good game tonight.
His shot looked good in this one. And, you know, maybe it's just getting that space with McCann and Burakovsky. The defense is focused on those guys. He was always going to be available.
I just think Burakovsky and McCann need a little bit more of a setup man.
Mm.
And I think Yamamoto is more where Cartier can shoot. Right?
Right.
I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on. I don't have like a lot of conviction and let's be honest, like I trust the staff that knows a little bit more how to put these together because I don't think I would have put these lines together, but they're working.
Oh so, man, I love them. I got to say, like when I saw that this is how they were trying to mix in Schwartz at practice on Saturday, where it was like, all right, you got Schwartz with Wennberg and Tanev on the second line. And then that means McCann is like needs to be put somewhere. Right. And you had Burakovsky kind of floating on an island on the fourth line with Yamamoto and with Cartier. And it's like, man, if you just throw another scorer in there with Burakovsky, now all of a sudden all four of these lines are really scary. And the only one that like doesn't make a ton of sense to me in the top nine is Brandon Tanev being on the second line.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But he's working great with Wennberg.
He looked great tonight.
He's a hard, fast forechecker. Yeah. So you throw him in with a guy who has like great setup abilities and
they complement each other pretty
well.
They did tonight. And
that's not the first time.
I would have liked to see Burakovsky. That's what I was thinking before.
Mm-hmm.
Burakovsky with Wennberg and then with Schwartz, all of a sudden I'm like, ooh, that's a pretty potent line. But again, like then that diminishes that other line.
But now every line has at least two really scary offensive players.
Scary. You might be I think scary is a little exaggerating, right?
Too good.
Yeah, like
two good offensive players.
Yeah, because I'm like, scary is Jack Eichel, right? You know, and you know McDavid. I don't know if anybody, but right.
Maybe I'm over my skis.
I know what you're saying here, but I love it. So.
Okay. Anyway, Riker Evans got called up. You alluded to it, which I wasn't terribly surprised by. I was a little surprised when they sent him down a couple weeks ago. So I wasn't surprised to see him come back up. They had him as a healthy scratch in this first game against Buffalo. I'm curious to see how they mix him in here because as we talked about on, I think, last week's show, Justin Schultz doesn't deserve to come out of the lineup, in my opinion. Brian Dumoulin doesn't deserve to come out of the lineup. I think Will Borgen has been awesome the last few weeks, so you certainly don't take him out. Jamie Oleksiak, I just think Hakstol loves Jamie Oleksiak. So it's got to come down to, if you're going to put Riker Evans in, it's got to be either Brian Dumoulin or Justin Schultz. And I think Justin Schultz is the one that makes sense, but I don't think he deserves it. So it's an interesting thing. To your point, there's this competition that's been created now that wasn't there before. It just wasn't there, right? And now at the forward core, at the defense lines, you have this competition. Even in net, there's going to be competition at some point because eventually Philip Grubauer is going to come back. So they're in a good spot here. The one thing about it, though, and somebody, I don't know if somebody just mentioned Edmonton keeps winning. Did we mention that or no? Maybe I saw it on Twitter. Edmonton keeps winning. They're also on a 7-game winning streak. So they also, I think, have 4 games in hand on the Kraken. So although they're behind them in the standings, Edmonton's like kind of the team that the Kraken need to get ahead of right now, and they're right there with them. So it's a weird spot. Like the Kraken, for as well as they're playing, they dug themselves into such a deep hole in the beginning of the season and with that 8-game losing streak that they need to continue to string these things along. So like this streak has to keep going. Like they need to keep winning and winning and winning. And if they have a little dip, they need to get back on a winning streak. They can't have any more long stretches without winning for the rest of the season here. They got to keep going. So that's an interesting situation. I mean, they're still technically in a wild card spot as of right now, but it's the bottom wild card spot. And again, everybody seems to have played fewer games than them. So
yeah, but it's starting over the last week, Kraken haven't played as frequently, and now all of a sudden the games at hand is actually a little smaller, right? Teams like Nashville, Arizona, St. Louis, all of a sudden like are kind of like within a game or two of the Kraken, where before it was like four games. So it was like, ugh, anything can happen here. But I think it's starting to balance out. So it's nice to kind of see that it's like, okay, they're still in the spot, even though they're getting tighter as far as the games played. So over the last 10 games, only Winnipeg has more points or the same amount of points as the Kraken in across the entire league. So that means they're gaining ground on everybody except for Winnipeg. But I am more worried about Edmonton. If you kind of like zoom back and kind of go, okay, well, how's this going to play out? Edmonton, I'm almost like penciling into one of the wild card spots. It's St. Louis, Nashville, and Arizona that I think that's who Seattle's really competing for, that last spot. Minnesota as well. But Minnesota's kind of, you know, they lost Chicago over the weekend, a Bedard-less Chicago. And so, you know, I don't know. It's a little early to start doing this, but I'm already doing it. So,
and actually, now that I said that they're still in a wild card spot, they officially are not in a wild card
Arizona's
spot.
Arizona's in, right?
No, Edmonton won again. So they have eight straight wins. They have the same number of points, but Edmonton's done it in fewer games because they've only played 37. Kraken have played 40. So I think they got to jump Nashville. I think, you know, they should have their sights set on Los Angeles. Realistically, they're only 4 points behind them. But again, Los Angeles has three fewer games. So at the end of the day, I don't think they even really look at this stuff. They need to just keep winning.
Keep winning,
that's,
right? Yeah,
that's what it is. So what else? Oliver Bjorkstrand is an all-star, which was kind of funny. The reveal was pretty funny. If you watch the video of him talking to Dave Hextall, where Hextall sat him down and he was like, oh, can you cancel your trip to San Diego because you're going to Toronto? And I think Bjorkstrand was even like a little confused. Like, what do you mean by that? Right. He's like, well, you're going to the All-Star game. He's like, oh, okay. And I think he definitely went through all the different emotions in about 3 seconds where he was excited. I think he was flattered. But at the same time, he was like, what about my trip to San Diego? Like, I think it all went through his brain in a very brief moment and showed up in just a confused look on his face on that video.
Yeah, I think maybe part of it may have been that Dave Hextall's delivery is not exactly note perfect. And so Bjorkstrand might have just been a little bit like, wait, what's happening? Am I being punked? Like, what?
Well, he told me, Bjorkstrand told me directly, he like didn't know what the meeting was about. He thought it was going to be something negative. And so he went in and he's like, what? Like, what? I'm going to the All-Star game? And clearly he wasn't expecting that. You know, like, I don't know. He hasn't been the top scorer. He is their second points guy. But I think he probably expected it to go to Vince Dunn or Jared McCann or somebody like that. So
yeah, I was thinking it would be Vince Dunn. I don't know about you guys.
I love that it's Bjorkstrand.
Yeah.
I do wonder, and we'll never get a straight answer. Like,
how did that get picked?
Well, no, not so much that, but is he happy to go, right? Mm-hmm. Is he honored to go? Because there's still a bye week after so he's got some downtime. So it's not like he's just quote unquote working the whole time, but this is his first All-Star game.
Yeah.
And I think that's an honor.
From talking to him, I think he's genuinely honored that he gets to go and do this. I think that this is like something that's outside of his comfort zone in terms of going and creating a bunch of like content and like being the focus
having
of the
attention.
Having a
bunch of cameras on him.
Yes. And, yeah. Like, I don't think that's really his thing. He's a pretty mild-mannered, quiet guy that, you know, I mean, at the same time, though, like, I think he's one of a very few Danish players that have ever made it. And so I think that's a big honor for him. I think he's excited about that. So, yeah. His Instagram post, I don't know if you guys saw that.
I did.
That was outstanding.
That was good. Yeah.
He put the picture of him with the big smile. He kind of very poorly photoshopped his face over his confused face from the video next to a picture of the canceled Airbnb.
Yeah.
So, yeah. pretty funny stuff. But congratulations to him. We're all very big Oliver Bjorkstrand fans. So we're hoping for the best. No, we're not hoping for the best. It's going to be great for him. We're happy for him. We talked about the depth of the team, which I think is great. Oh, I know what we need to talk about. We need to update the weekly wager from last week. How about this? Allison just pops in for one episode, and she dominates the weekly wager. Which, again, so it's clear she did not place any kind of bet. She just picked for her sake. There was no bet placed here. But, she pops in, says it's going to be Vince Dunn that has the most goals. Vince Dunn scores 2. I pick Tolvanen. Curtis picks Bjorkstrand. John picks McCann, all of whom put up a donut.
Over.
Zero goals from any of those guys. Despite the team scoring 9 goals in the last 2 games, none of those guys scored a goal.
In a bunch of different goal scorers. Yeah.
I picked an all-star. I
mean, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
No. Congratulations to Allison.
Yeah.
One fun point for her.
She continues to just show us that she's much smarter than us. Yep. Every step, every twist and turn.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I think you did mention, we mentioned at least in talking about the games that Jaden Schwartz came back off LTIR.
Did I not mention
it? I don't know if we
seemed important.
Headlined that.
Explicitly, but, maybe not.
But I just want to mention it in the sense of when we're talking about depth, since he's out of LTIR right now, they are actually kind of, they're eating into their accrued cap space with their roster composition as it is right now. They can do it for a while, but there is going to have to be a roster transaction at some point here. It seems like Devin Shore is probably the logical choice to go through waivers and see if you can get him back to Coachella Valley. But just wanted to put that on the radar. There's probably something that's going to be coming down the road here at some point.
I don't know if we're going to talk about this later, so maybe I'm jumping the gun, but
I'll tell you to put a pin in it if we need to.
Can we talk about Driedger?
Sure. Let's talk about him.
Let's do some Driedger talk.
What is his exact scenario? Somebody told me he's listed as emergency loan. Is that accurate?
I don't know if that is accurate. That is how he's listed on Cap Friendly. I didn't see anything from the team indicating
when they called him up.
That he was recalled on an emergency basis. And I just, in researching the issue, wasn't able to find anything online indicating as much. But, you know, Cap Friendly tends to be pretty accurate. So the distinction there, I think he's, as of we're recording this, he's maybe been on the roster for 29 days.
Over,
it's either 29 days or 30 days.
Yeah.
And he's also been on the roster for, I think, either 11 or 12 games. Either way, it's over the 10-game threshold for waivers eligibility. Right. So I think pretty much either way, if he's on the roster by the time you're listening to this tomorrow, he's going to require waivers to go back. Because he'll either have...
Unless they call up, like, Stezka, I don't think Grubauer's anywhere close to ready.
Yeah, they might not. It seems like they don't have an option. So whether he's on an emergency recall or a standard recall, long story short, by tomorrow, if he's still on the roster, it won't matter. He'll require waivers to go back.
Okay, so to be clear, I don't think anybody's claiming him because his cap hit is pretty significant compared to, like, I don't think there's many teams that are looking for a goalie that can afford a $3+ million contract in their budget, if you will.
I think that's right. I think a trade with salary retention
Why I'm kind of keeping an eye on him is he should get at least one game on this road trip. Mm-hmm. And he had an excellent last game.
There's a back-to-back coming up.
Yeah, there's a back-to-back. So that's why. And we're rooting for Driedger, right?
Of course.
Yeah. I think he wants to play.
Yeah.
And so when Grubauer comes back, he'll have to go down and he probably won't get claimed because of his salary. There is a scenario where the Kraken could trade him and retain, which I'm kind of interested if that could play out. So I'm hoping he does really well just in general, and then potentially they move him instead of sending him down to Coachella.
Right.
So that's something I keep an eye on. I'm not predicting that, but like I think that could play out that way.
And either way, it ultimately plays out that will, I think as we discussed last time, will kind of solve a lot of their salary cap crunch issue.
Right.
Whether they trade him, whether he goes down.
Which is why I kind of brought it up now. Yep. So more contract talk, Darren?
No, let's not do that. Sorry, I had a pause there because I just fell asleep while you guys were talking about that. No, it's important stuff. It is important stuff. I saw people asking about it and I didn't really know the answers. So I'm glad, Curtis, you knew on that. So World Juniors happened also, and I gotta say, I was thinking back to, I guess it was COVID times, and maybe this is why it was such a big deal, but remember when the Team USA won during COVID? They won the World Juniors. That was the, like, one barrel at a time year, right? I was so amped for that, although they beat Canada in the final two, so that really added to it, probably. This one, I was kind of like, I don't know. I just didn't really like care that USA won. And I think that might have been because I was more excited about the Kraken prospects, none of whom were on Team USA. I think might have been the reason that I didn't have much of an emotional response to USA winning gold.
Did the Kraken exist? They didn't exist when they
I don't
won.
Think so. I think it was before. Because wasn't it 2020 when they won the World Juniors?
I do think the tournament loses something from a USA perspective when the US doesn't play Canada, as was the case this time.
Right.
They did not match up at any point, and Russia isn't there.
Yeah.
Not matching up with Russia either. I mean, those are kind of the games my eyeballs would be on.
They had a pretty easy path to gold, right? I mean, they're not that the pool really matters, like the round robin play doesn't really matter. Like if you're a legitimate hockey power, you're almost guaranteed to go through. But then it's just, I don't know, they just were never even tested.
But they obtained the number one overall seed, mm-hmm. and that got them the easiest matchup in the quarters, and then it reseeds, and in the semis, they got the easiest remaining team. So they did get an easy road, but it's because they dominated their relatively easy group,
easy
to your
group.
Point.
Yeah.
We have a test case coming up here, because next year, the U.S. and Canada will be in the same group. So they're guaranteed to play. We should put a stake in that
and
one.
North
and
American
get back
times.
To us.
North American times.
Yeah, and
right?
North American times. That could be part of it too, perhaps, the early morning games. But if you feel a little bit more drama next year, maybe that's the reason. I think there is something to what you were saying as well. I was pretty focused on the Kraken prospects.
I also, by the way, there is a Winter Classic that I was
completely
inundated with.
I forgot about that.
I wasn't paying just nearly as close of attention to this one. Even like trying to watch the games was a little harder because of, to your point, the timing. So
yeah,
We should mention USA wins gold. They get a 5-2 win over Sweden. Cruise through. They looked awesome. 6-2 was the final.
That might have been my bad news.
And they
6-2,
but they just were dominant. I mean, they absolutely deserved it.
And Sweden was pretty good, but.
It
not
aligns with
US,
your narrative there from your data dump about how good USA hockey is becoming here, John. It really is. It is becoming a true power in global hockey. And I think the thing you put on soundofhockey.com, and you do it somewhat regularly, where you kind of update how many players in the NHL are from different countries and whatever. And you have that one chart where it's got Canada very steadily sloping down over the years, and USA very steadily sloping up in the number of American players. And they're almost touching. Like they're almost there. They're going in totally opposite
it's
directions.
It's about 41% of the league is Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like 29% is American.
Yeah.
In the spring, I also do the USA hockey membership numbers, which is also, like, COVID aside, right, usually climbing. And it's growing in areas that you wouldn't expect it, like California and Florida and Arizona. Those places are actually starting to produce some of these World Junior athletes that eventually get drafted or they're already drafted. It's impressive. And, Canada's still really good. So, like, I don't want to kind of crap on Canada by any means, because
let's do it.
It's just an off year, I think, for them. So yeah.
As far as the Kraken prospects that were in there, Niklas Kokko ends up taking fourth place. He had a tough game there in the bronze
rough
medal
third.
Game against Czechia, which had Edward Chalet. So he gets a bronze medal after winning a silver medal last year. So how about that for Czechia?
And he's still eligible to go next year. Isn't that crazy?
That is pretty crazy. Yeah, no one really had them in the mix for a medal, but good on them.
And they looked horrible. Didn't they lose to Germany or something first?
Might have.
Yeah.
There was loss. Oh, Slovakia. I think they had an early loss to Slovakia.
I thought it was somebody lower than that. Slovakia is pretty good.
Yeah. But what are your general takeaways here, Curtis? I know you probably kept a pretty close eye on the Kraken prospects. Carson Rakoff, I believe, had a good tournament, although Canada lost real early in the quarters there. What else? What were some of the others that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah.
Yanni Newman, maybe?
Yeah, Yanni Newman had a good bronze medal game. He was generating chances. He looks like he has taken a step forward from, the World Juniors looks, and kind of other international exhibitions tend to be the best chance I have to get a look at him. And I think he has taken a step forward. He's producing in Liga as well as professional league. So I thought he looked pretty good. He didn't convert a number of his chances, but he was always like the highest volume shooter for Finland, game in and game out, and looked pretty solid. Coco had a couple good games, but I'd say on the whole, the tournament was a bit of a disappointment for him, particularly that bronze medal game where Finland had a lead with 2 minutes left in the game, and he gave up two goals, and I think in a 14-second span. I mean, I can't imagine how heartbreaking that is.
And they
is.
Weren't, like, good goals.
He struggled with some outs, giving up some kind of leaky goals in this tournament. So, I mean, it's just he's performed well, again, in Liga. So, I mean, it's a shame for him that he had a pretty poor two-week showing here.
And for kind of newer hockey fans' benefit, like, goalies tend to take a lot longer to get into the NHL, right? So it's nothing to be concerned about. And a lot of goalies, they're like long-term bets. And so we might not know for 4 years if he's going to play or not.
Absolutely.
Where the other. And back to Newman real quick. My Finnish friend who reads a lot of Finnish hockey articles says that he could play in North America next year and even make the jump to, at least that's what they're saying in Finland, make the jump to the Kraken directly, which I did not think would be likely, but I could also see him just playing in Coachella for a year to get used to the North American ice and then set him up for the Kraken.
I think we heard something from Ron Francis over the summer suggesting that, you know, Newman and potentially Coco as well could come over. I mean, it's never a guaranteed thing, but could come over next year. And if Coco comes to North America next year, that's a really aggressive time frame for a goalie, to your point. John, they tend to, I mean, Joey Decord is just establishing himself now and he's 27 in that range. Coco is still a very young goaltender, a long way to go. This is by no means, we shouldn't be making any large conclusions here. But, you know, going in, we thought if Finland was going to have a chance, it was going to be because Coco is the next like standout superstar Finnish goalie that just kind of is a wall for them. And that wasn't the case, unfortunately. And then my thoughts on the Canadian prospects, maybe this is a good time to transition into our next segment.
Do you mean down in the farm? Moo!
I did mean that. Thanks,
nice
Darren.
Work on that. That was an alley-oop segue. I appreciated that.
Carson Rakoff played mostly as the 13th forward for Canada, aside from the one game where Connor Geeky was ejected early in the game for a hit, and he ended up playing. Carson Rakoff ended up getting a lot of ice time, but didn't get a lot of ice time, performed fairly well when he was in there, generating chances. Jagr Furkus was called over there to be on the roster, but never got into a game. Ty Nelson was kind of in a similar spot to Carson Rakoff on the defensive side, where he was the seventh defenseman, active, played a bit in the games, but didn't really get much ice time. And I mention all this because those are three pretty prolific scorers in the Canadian Hockey League, and Canada just really couldn't get their offense going in this tournament. And what should happen with these guys when they come back to North America, to the Canadian Hockey League? But Carson Rakoff played one game in his return to the CHL this past weekend, had three goals and an assist. Jagr Furkus played two games over the weekend, had two goals and five assists, 7 points in two games. And Ty Nelson scored in his first game back too. So those seem like, you know, some pieces that maybe Team Canada could have utilized.
Yeah, maybe. Carson Rakoff, worth noting, he's an underager, right? So he'll be back there next year.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, it's
likely a top six power play option next year. Yep,
it's just cool to see these guys in. Hey, as long as we're talking about World Junior Kraken players, prospects, Edward Schala was also traded this week from the Barrie Colts to the Kitchener Rangers as part of the CHL trade deadline lead up. So now he is on the same team as Carson Rakoff, which makes the Kitchener Rangers. I mean, how often are we going to be updating on the Kitchener Rangers moving forward, do we think? Is this officially a Kitchener Rangers podcast?
It's a pro Kitchener, yeah.
Okay. Similar to when we were pro Charlotte for a while.
I was just going to say, is it fourth after Charlotte? No, it's third. It's above Charlotte.
No, Charlotte's dead to us. Charlotte is.
We've already established that.
Dead to us.
Do they still have a team? I don't even know.
Literally, I have literally no idea.
No, but what's cool is I do have the CHL package. I don't know if you do.
Yeah,
you
do too,
Curtis. Yeah.
Geez, not to brag.
Yeah. But
quite the flex there, John.
It's sometimes like when there's so much NHL hockey on and I have Coachella, I have AHL package.
Oh, another one.
I don't know if that's a flex, right? It's just, it's probably an embarrassment that I watch that much hockey. But when there's only one prospect on a team, that's not always the most enjoyable games to watch. So now that there's two prospects on Kitchener makes them a lot more appetizing to watch.
You know, and it's possible they end up on the same line, but I would imagine they'll probably be in separate lines. So that might be about half the game.
They would be a good pair, though, right? They actually match up pretty well. Yeah. So
what's interesting there, it reminds me of having, like, I had a bunch of players. I mean, my fantasy football team was really bad this year, but like I had a bunch of players on the Pittsburgh Steelers. So like at the beginning of the season, I was like, I got to catch the Steelers game, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, like, I got to
exactly,
catch this. Yeah. I was like, sorry, where are you going with this? I can't go out. Yeah, I got a Kitchener Rangers game to watch. Yeah, exactly. Tonight. So anyway, it's interesting. I think I always find those trades in the CHL to be interesting. And there were more to talk about. So with that in mind, let's move to our weekly one-timers.
Whoopsh.
Our first weekly one-timer.
Whoopsh.
There was a trade that involved the aforementioned Connor Geeky, who got kicked out of that game. He was traded to Swift Current from the Wenatchee Wild, and the Wenatchee Wild also traded Matthew Savoy to the Moose Jaw Warriors. So he's going to be playing along with Jagger Furkus, which is pretty exciting because he's a stud player. But I just, it's so fascinating here, like how these things play out. And Wenatchee was a top three team in the league.
Stacked.
They were playing really well. They decided to trade away their top two players. And the explanation was, shout out to Cameron, our guy Cameron, who actually got the explanation from the Wenatchee Wild general manager, that he was like, hey, we're going to stink, you know, these next few years if we don't start to acquire some draft capital.
Because they had like nothing.
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 Yeah. They had traded everybody away because the Winnipeg Ice were going for it last year, right? And so they still were, had the remnants of that. The team was still excellent. But man, that's crazy to be in that position where you're like, we have a chance to win the league here, and they don't go for it. They trade those guys away. In their first season.
In their first season in a new location. I mean, I wonder if, you know, they just took a hard look at it, and not having Zach Benson, that just kind of, they felt like it just wasn't worth the bet. But that's a hard thing to do in your first season, like you said.
Well, and the other thing there too is, like, if you think about what the Thunderbirds did last season, where they traded away a bunch of assets to get themselves over the hump, and it worked, right?
Yep.
It absolutely worked.
It did.
But if these guys thought, if Wenatchee thought, all right, we have nothing left to trade, which I remember, it might have been Andy even, that was like, hey, we're making one more. He heard somebody say, hey, we're making another trade. And they were like, no, we're out of assets, right? And Bill LaForge was like, no, we have something else that we can throw, right? But it might have been that scenario where they truly thought they were out of assets that they could throw at this thing. They didn't want to be terrible for the next 5 years in their new locations. So anyway, they make that trade, which I think is fascinating. I'm kind of excited to see how Savoy and Jagger Furkus do together.
Yeah, same. They could go on a deep run.
Moose Jaw comes through here in March, I think. Yep. So keep an eye on that.
Our next weekly one-timer. Speaking of star young players getting traded, I can't believe we've waited this long to get to the Cutter Gauthier saga from the last couple of days here. So Cutter Gauthier, after his star turn in the World Junior Championship, immediately gets traded by the Philadelphia Flyers to the Anaheim Ducks for Jamie Drysdale and a second round pick. Curtis, do you want to take us through what has transpired here on this particular transaction?
All right, I'll do my best. You guys fill in if there's pieces of this I missed.
Sure.
But what I've been able to gather is that there was, after the World Championships in this last spring, the Flyers told Gauthier that they wouldn't be signing him for that season, which, if you recall, like with Matty Beniers, for example, if a player is signed towards the end of the year, it can burn a year off their entry-level deal, which these top prospects want to do, right? They want to get to a negotiated contract as quickly as possible. So they told him they're not going to do that. I guess they had some salary cap issues. And then after that, Gauthier essentially ghosted the team from there, like just didn't communicate with the team at all. And eventually word got, you know, he told them he didn't want to play for them at some point. And going into this last year's draft, the Flyers knew this. They knew that Gauthier had told them he didn't want to play in Philadelphia. So they'd made him available then, couldn't consummate a trade at that time, figured they'd keep working on him, see if they could get him to come back. They tried to meet with him at the World Juniors in Sweden. He refused to meet with them. And so they figured, okay, it's truly over. We need to trade him. And I guess this was they got aggressive about it over the last few days. And once Jamie Drysdale, he was the number 6th overall pick in his draft. A young right shot defenseman has dealt with some injuries, but you know, there still might be some significant upside there. To hear the Flyers say it, they really like Drysdale's future. So when they saw that they could get a premium asset back, they made the move.
A quick retorts for you. Torts was asked about this, and he said, "I don't know Cutter from a hole in the wall. I don't want. I don't want to talk about him. I want to talk about Jamie, who's coming here." So, good line from Torts. The one thing that I'll kind of throw in there that I thought was really interesting was the Flyers were able to keep general managers from letting this leak that they were, because allegedly they talked to like 20 different teams about figuring out a place to send Cutter Gauthier. But the other thing that I think is interesting is how quickly they came out and just trashed him, right? Like fully threw him under the bus. Like, well, he didn't want to play here. This is what's going on. Really didn't like hold a lot of punches.
I thought
there,
they might do like a Twitter post with like Gritty ripping down a poster of Cutter Gauthier or something. They were really going all in on him there for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was relatively respectful and gentle, but they, you know, if they wanted to vilify him with the Philadelphia fan base, who is a brutal, brutal fan base, they have succeeded in doing so.
Can you imagine the first time he plays in Philadelphia?
Oof, it is going to be rough. Yeah, it is going to be rough.
The one thing, though, about him is there's no guarantee he's a hit, right? Because I always think of Alex Turcotte in these same situations. I don't know if you remember, Turcotte was drafted fifth overall in 2019.
Wisconsin Badger, right?
Yeah, and in that Vancouver draft.
Yeah.
But he's like not lived up to expectations. I mean, he's still bouncing around the AHL, NHL, but people were really high on him. And similar to Gauthier, I think they're really high on him, but there's no guarantee.
Right.
So keep that in mind. I like Jamie Drysdale too, so we'll keep an eye on this too.
Which brings me to my hypothetical. So now within these weekly one-timers, we have a hypothetical and a retorts within the weekly one-timers.
We're giving
embedded,
the people what they
embedded
want.
Segments. I love it.
Here's my hypothetical. So I'm not saying that this is a trade that ever would have been proposed, but let's say Ryker Evans gets offered up 1-for-1 for Jamie Drysdale. Do you think that's a fair trade where each team is getting like similar level?
No.
Okay. Who says no on that one?
And I'm
excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent enunciation. Okay. So if you were the Kraken and
I would do that in a second.
You would do it in the second.
Yeah.
So you would do Cutter Gauthier for a second round
pick. I thought we were talking about Drysdale.
Because I was trying to set value for Ryker Evans to understand where he kind of would have fallen here. So if you were able to trade Ryker Evans and a second for Cutter Gauthier, would you have made that
Absolutely.
Trade?
Absolutely.
You would have?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my first reaction too. That's precisely where my mind went. And honestly, I thought it would be, if you were going to make a comparable trade, it'd probably be Evans in a first or Evans in 2 seconds would probably be closer.
So, yeah, to your
point.
So
you think Drysdale...
But that's like, where I start to question doing it first.
And is that because Drysdale has proven himself as an NHLer and he was drafted so much higher? Or like, do you see higher upside for Drysdale versus Evans?
I think that, you know, there's the right shot piece and then just, the higher pedigree, higher upside potential. I like Ryker Evans, but I think the Flyers needed to sell a potential premium top line type of player in return for this, or wanted to. You know, hearing them talk about it after the trade, they liked the name of Jamie Drysdale and they liked that he's a potential first pair right defenseman. I don't think that Evans profiles as
I think we're really excited about Evans, but I don't think he's on a lot of people's radar. I'm sure, you know,
he's climbing. He's definitely coming out.
He gets scouted. So I'm not saying he doesn't get scouted, but I just don't think we value him a lot more than other teams do right now.
I agree with you completely. My reaction to this trade and just spinning it to the Kraken perspective was precisely what you thought, Darren. It was, I hope they offered Ryker Evans in a second just to see, you know.
Because, interesting.
No sure thing Cutter Gauthier becomes anything.
Right.
He's producing
right.
pretty well at Boston College, but I think that's a bet worth taking. He's a you know, the type of power forward that the Kraken have Yanni Newman potentially coming, but he would be a nice complement to what they have.
Back to our weekly one-timers now. Our next weekly one-timer. Willie Nylander has signed a massive extension with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, he's the richest forward on the team, right? $11.5 million times 8 years. Is he making more than Austin Matthews and everybody else? I think he is.
In terms of total contract value, yes. But I think Matthews is over 13.
Is he?
Annual. Okay. Yep.
Nonetheless, it's a big payday for Willie Nylander, who His pants are pretty short. He wears pretty short pants.
There's hashtag a lot, analysis.
Like, there's a lot of space there between the top of his shin pad and his breezers, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
So
he's a stylish player.
Yeah.
You know, we talked, kicked around his name informally as a potential offseason fit for the Kraken, but it always kind of felt like he was going back to
realistic,
Toronto.
Right? Yeah.
Well, now that you see what this deal is, right? $11.5 million for 8 years.
I think that's what the Kraken would pay.
Yeah.
I'd do that deal if he was available. I just didn't think he'd ever be available.
Yeah.
And the deal is fine. Yeah. I do wonder though about this. I mean, I don't care about the Maple Leafs at all, but like, you have to wonder how good this contract ends up looking in like 3 years, you know, when they're like, they can't pay players anymore because they have so much money tied up in Auston Matthews. They have so much money tied up in Willie Nylander. How much time does John Tavares have
one more,
left? You know, one more year? After this. Okay. Yeah. Well, he'll come off the books, I guess. So that works out. But yeah, it's interesting. Oh, and Mitch Marner, right? Does Mitch Marner fit in? I don't know. We'll see. There might have to be
somebody explained it to me pretty well last night at my own hockey. If they really need to fit somebody in, like, it should be easy to trade one of these guys, right? Like, they're not as handcuffed to these guys as it might seem. Now, there is a no move clause, so I think that changes things. But anyway, yeah.
Our next weekly one-timer. The LA Kings have announced that Phoenix Copley is out for the remainder of the season, which is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate, and he's their backup goalie.
Yeah.
And so now it lies on Cam Talbot.
You wanted to say Cal Peterson.
I was going to come back to Cal Peterson.
Talbot.
Oh, don't they wish they had Cal Peterson now? So,
well, I bet they don't. Yeah. Cam Talbot is having a great season, but yeah, to your point.
He is, right?
It's a lot of pressure.
And to your point earlier, maybe the Kraken can keep an eye on the Kings in the standings. And Kings are playing well. They're a good team. But
what if they end up claiming Chris Drieger?
Claiming. Could they fit him?
I don't know. I mean, if they put Copley on LTIR, how much is Copley making? Probably not 3-5.
Not that much. Yeah.
Anyway, you look that up. Our next weekly one-timer. Speaking of injuries, Connor Bedard. This is a tough one. Connor Bedard out 4 to 6 weeks. And why is that tough for you, John?
Well, it just so happens the Chicago Blackhawks are coming to town in 3 weeks. So within that time frame. And so that hurts Chicago as well, because Megan Chicka posted a kind of with Bedard, without Bedard, and where they rank across a bunch of different categories. And without Bedard, they rank 32nd across the board. So he's one of the only highlights on that team right now. And Colin Blackwell, who had 2 goals. So, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Good on him.
Do we want to do one more weekly one-timer? I guess we can. Our final weekly one-timer. Coachella Valley Firebirds are going to... We could have done this on Down on the Farm, actually. Coachella Valley Firebirds are going to host the 2025 AHL All-Star Game. So, have you purchased your flight?
I have not purchased
yet?
My tickets or flights.
Okay.
I do think that there's something cool about the AHL All-Star Game. I think Riker Evans was in it last year.
He was, yeah.
I just think it's a little more loose and fun, and you get to see prospects probably playing pretty well, or you don't get to see them too often. So I actually think the All-Star Game is pretty cool. I think it's cool that they're hosting. I don't know if I'm going down for it, though.
Okay.
I mean,
fair enough.
But really, really great for Coachella Valley. I mean, they've carried over the momentum from last year's playoffs.
Lots of sellouts this year.
A lot of sellouts this year. I mean, good for them. I mean, it's great.
It's great.
Really going well.
And they're winning. Right? Yeah. So
those are our weekly one-timers. We close the show with our...
Uh-oh.
You know what? I just remembered something that I was going to mention to you guys when we were talking about the World Juniors. Do you remember last week I said that we were all going to travel to the World Juniors when it's in Minnesota and my family was going to...
Yeah. Did you get that approved?
It's good to go.
Okay.
You
all
guys
right.
are in.
Awesome.
So,
excellent.
Sounds perfect.
Are we staying at different Browns?
Actually, we could do that. Each of us could stay with a different
Brown.
One
it's
could
like
stay
a host
with
family.
My parents. One could a billet. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
One could stay with my sister's family. One could stay with my brother's family. So,
oh man.
And then we can all report back on how it's going, which would be that might
what
be
house,
the best.
What
way
house
to do
will
it.
Be the most fun?
That's tough. Probably my parents' house.
Really?
I mean, if you like going to bed at 8, which I think you do.
What the F that's supposed to mean?
Well, I don't know. You're kind of an early to rise.
I stay up after 8.
Let's put it this way. I think my mother probably has a similar sleep pattern to yours.
Who drinks more coffee?
Probably her.
Okay, cool.
Actually, no. She's like, really cut back.
Oh, well, will there be coffee
yeah.
at 6 a.m.?
Yep.
Okay, all right.
Definitely. 100%.
Right, I'm in.
Okay.
I'm back in.
There you go. We now move on. So either way, let it be known. Mom
let
and dad,
the record show.
Yep. Yeah. I'm coming home. 2025. probably before then too. But
yeah.
Okay. We close the show with our tweets of the week. Curtis, your tweet of the week.
Okay. So this is a quote tweet. Roger Sherman is quoting a tweet that says, people are camping outside Target at 4 a.m. for the Starbucks Stanley cups.
Mm.
These are like mugs, yeah. Stanley
well
mugs. Yeah. And
thank you for that.
Well, if you're not on the internet like these two, jokers.
you enunciated that T in internet the same way you said center earlier.
There you go.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure people are aware.
It's interesting.
Roger Sherman says, waiting outside for a few hours for a Stanley Cup isn't so bad. The entire nation of Canada has been waiting for one since 1993.
Oh.
Got him.
Yeah, got their ass.
Got him. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Mine, so we tweeted out from the Sound of Hockey account tonight, John has his new light up, like a neon sign that says, what does it say, John?
Whoosh.
Right. So it's spelled out in neon letters. So I said, it's time for our next weekly one-timer, and then we lit up the sign, and John did the sound effect. And I wrote, the intern wrote, new addition to Bar Down Studios, sound required. Dean Willard at Iron Gavel responded and just said, I always wondered how to spell that. whoopish. John, do you have a...
I don't.
Yeah, I noticed that you didn't have one written down, so...
Well, I usually don't have them written down anyway.
Okay.
So.
They just come straight out of your brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Oh, do I have something to say?
Yeah, you have to close the show so I can
God,
sing.
Man, I'm not good at this.
I wrote you a script.
It's in the notes.
It's literally in the notes.
Okay.
All right.
That wraps up episode 269 of the Sound of Hockey.
Turn down your volume a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, all right.
No, keep going.
Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it on next week's show. Subscribe on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Join our Patreon at patreon.com/soundofhockey. We do have a mailbag coming up that's only to Patreon members. Stick taps to Andy, as always. We will talk to you all very soon.
I'm coming
for episode 269, which is the same one you mentioned in the beginning.
I'm coming home.
Cheers.
Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday. I know my kingdom awaits, and they're forgiving my mistakes. I'm coming home.
I don't know this song.
I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming.